Once again, we welcome Consumer Guide Automotive Publisher Tom Appel. Good evening, Tom. How are you?
Good evening. I'm good. Thank you.
Good. Where should we start? How about electricity? Okay, John, but a great idea. You know, I have in my hand the Consumer Report from, I guess, well, it's recent. And one of the items is EVs you'll love. And they've got electric vehicle trucks from Ford, GMC, Hummer, Rivian, Tesla, Audi, Nissan, Volkswagen, Volvo, not to mention the Ford Mustang Mach-E, all electric. What's going on?
A lot of these vehicles, this is the moment in time where we will learn how hard it will be to make the transition to electric, because all of those vehicles you just mentioned are either available now or available very soon, and they're all fairly compelling offerings. One of the things that's happened is that the price of EVs has come down, perhaps not to parity with gasoline engines, but once you apply the federal tax credit, which is $7,500 off your taxes, it's very close to parity, and the case is compelling. They're more fun to drive. They're generally quicker. They're more energy efficient. There's a lot going on there, but will people accept them? I don't know, but the variety of cars, the number of cars is at its highest ever.
Well, the thing that always struck me about the any electric vehicle was its range, number one, and how you would recharge, so to speak. Like, just these examples that I gave you, the GMC Hummer EV says the range is about 350 miles. The Tesla is 250. Yeah, these are around 250 to 300 to 300. Well, the Volvo here is only 208 miles. I mean, are you going to spend $53,990 for a Volvo that only goes 208 miles between checkups, I was going to say, between recharging? I mean, that's got to be a consideration as how far you get to go.
That is the big convenience handoff right now. We're going to see improved range fairly soon. But the vehicles right now, as you mentioned, a lot of them are about 250. Some of them go to 300. Some of them are just over 200. The good news is you don't have to stop someplace to charge during a normal work week. You can just come home and plug it in and never think about it. And it's just as easy as plugging in and taking out the connector. So it's a very easy thing that doesn't involve stopping someplace if you're not going on a long trip. Obviously, if you're going on a long trip, you need to find high-speed charging along the way. And that infrastructure is being developed as we speak.
Yeah, and that will all be, that's, as they say, a work in progress on so many different levels. The recharging stations, the mileage on the vehicle themselves, and whether or not the automotive public in the United States is ready to accept electric vehicles on a large scale. I mean, the hybrids have done well, haven't they? The combination battery gasoline hybrid, those cars did well and are still doing well, aren't they?
Yeah, and hybrids don't require anything in terms of compromise by the owner. No. Early hybrids, especially like the early Priuses, they were a little bit down on power. So you had to accept that you were trading something for that efficiency. But now, hybrid vehicles, the new Toyota Venza, for example, and the new Toyota Sienna minivan, these vehicles are hybrid only. And Toyota's not even bothering to really advertise that fact. They just happen to be very efficient vehicles that are also crossovers or minivans. And I think that's just fine. I think acceptance of hybrids is almost 100%. I don't think people worry about that anymore.
Yeah, but acceptance of taking the hybrid away and only leaving the electric as the mode of transportation, that's a whole different thing. I mean, I've pulled into some parking lots and seen maybe one or two charging stations along the way, you know, or a garage, public garage or something like that. But certainly nothing along the lines that would be needed to support an infrastructure of people driving electric vehicles around the country. I mean, wow. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
here in here in Niles near my office, there's a Tesla supercharger station. And Tesla sort of set the groundwork for how this should work. But a Tesla supercharger station includes the one by our office, I think, has 20 charger stations, each of which is super fast charging. So you can stop there and get an 80% charge in about 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's a good template for how this should work and probably will work in the reasonably near future.
We're going to take a break and talk more cars with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, after this break on 720 WGN. Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, throwing some of those really weird car ads at you for the Yugo. That was made in Russia, was it not?
Where was it made? Yugoslavia.
Yugoslavia, so, yeah, well, of course, Union, Yugo.
Certainly.
Right, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Man, what a piece of junk that was. Wow. I remember it was just like tin. And, you know, you'd see, even now, if somebody's trying to be an authentic TV show set in Russia or Yugoslavia or whatever, years and years ago, everybody's driving around on a Yugo and a Lada. That's the other one, a Lada.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why I went down that rabbit hole. So let's leave the EVs behind for a while and get to some of these other things. You know, I have a good friend of mine who operates a multi-car dealership, and he's been telling me for weeks about this microchip shortage, and he's just frothing at the mouth to get his hands on used cars because there just doesn't seem to be any kind of inventory around. And then I see this article that Ford will pay you while you wait for a new car.
Yes.
What?
Yes. As crazy as that sounds, and for people who don't know, the microchip shortage is just that. It is a shortage of microchips that was brought on by the pandemic. And the net result is, there's a lot of story there, but the net result is that auto manufacturers underestimated sales during and immediately after the pandemic, and they don't have microchips to build vehicles with. And there's lots of microchips in each vehicle. So manufacturers are being judicious about what cars they build, and they're primarily building high-profit vehicles that they can sell until the chip shortage is alleviated. But one of the problems with this is that manufacturers are not supplying fleet customers, like rental companies, with cars, and so rental companies have to hold on to their cars. And this means that there is an enormous shortage of nearly new used cars. Not to mention there's already a shortage of new cars.
Right.
So the thing has gotten brutal, and there are stories of people who purchased a car a year or two ago being able to sell their vehicle right now used for what they paid for it.
Wow. But what is Ford going to give you? I mean, are they actually going to give you money, or are they just going to take it off the sticker price?
The way I read what Ford is doing right now, it's a $1,000 rebate that they will give to you if you currently have an order in for a vehicle that has not been delivered. What they don't want is to lose you as a customer.
Right.
And the Ford F-150, one of their highest profit models, is in very, very short supply, and the vehicle has been delayed to customers. They don't want people leaving to go buy a Silverado or a Ram, though those vehicles are also in short supply. So that may not happen anyway. But yeah, if you hold your place in line, you may be set to receive an extra $1,000 off your car.
Wow. You know, you mentioned used cars and also rental car companies.
Yes.
This is a couple of weeks old. I haven't checked lately, but have you seen the price of rental cars these days because of this shortage?
They're astonishing. My wife was reading to me the price of renting a car in Hawaii for a week.
And that was how much?
It was over four digits. It was something like $1,200 bucks.
For a week?
Yeah.
I mean, wow. These are the kinds of things that don't normally at least pop to the front of my mind when you go through the year that we've been through. But once the smoke clears, you see all these different aspects that have been affected, from the chip to the rent-a-car. It goes on and on and on. And, you know, I don't need to tell you, the United States, man, this is a car country. I mean, we like our cars. How long do you think the chip, what is the answer to the chip shortage? Is there one? I mean, obviously it's going to happen at some point.
The problem is it takes a very long time to wrap up chip production. From start to stop, the fastest you can build a chip is about 5 months. Apparently, it's very difficult to create the different layers of a microchip. And a lot of the factories are running at capacity just to supply electronic requirements of people who are at home and sheltering and working from their house. So capacity was constrained, and it takes a long time to ramp up new orders. But they're saying that September is when we should start to see some easing of the car shortage. But it may not be normal until early in 2022.
Yeah, the price of so many, I mean, I've heard of people getting a car and then selling it. It reminds me of when the Chrysler, what was that car they came out? I can't even remember the name of it. And everybody wanted it at the beginning. It was a retro-looking.
The PT Cruiser.
The PT Cruiser came out and everybody wanted one. And, you know, the demand was higher than the supply. And, you know, I think the car listed somewhere around, I don't know, let's say $23,000. And some people were selling them, and people were buying them for, like, almost double that, simply because they didn't have the inventory. And I know at least of one instance where, I mean, it wasn't double, but somebody had their hands on a relatively new car, and somebody else wanted it, and they sold it for way above sticker price.
That did not last.
No.
That was a commodity car that was unexceptional apart from its design. Yeah, and those resale values fell fast after that.
Oh, yeah. but I think in the era of shortages, if you get your hands on something, somebody else will pay you more than what it's worth simply because it's not around right now. But at any rate, enough of that. I have a headline here, automakers tap Disney's designers, EV racers, and software specialists to drive their future. What does that mean?
That's an interesting story. That appeared in the Detroit News, the Detroit Free Press, I think, first. But it's a really interesting look into what is happening in car design these days. One of the things that happened to automakers, all automakers, is that they found the electronic age somewhat thrust upon them, at least the digital age. And things like iPhones and you know, smartphones and iPads and pads and things like this all sort of shape the way consumers expected to interface with anything electronic. And car makers really not ready for that. They'd been designing cars pretty much the same way for 50 years, you know, and the interfaces evolved slowly. But all of a sudden, they found themselves having to compete with things like Apple and Android. And the result was they had to find fresh new talent to really guide them through this. And they've been going to interesting places to find people, and they're no longer competing just with engineering schools, but they're trying to find what they call UX or user experience experts that are coming from outside of the auto industry. And they bring a really fresh look to the way things work. In one of the stories that this article goes into has to do with the new Wagoneer coming out from Jeep. And how that vehicle is just all view screens and video screens on the inside, just lots of touch screens. And to make those work and to make them make sense and to make them interface with people in a way that they expect, they went outside and outsourced talent from places like Disney. They actually got a guy who had worked at Disney on video. And, yeah, it's a great story, and I think it's an interesting look at what it takes to stay fresh in an industry like the auto industry.
Yeah, because not just the electric EV, but as you mentioned, the touch screens and the technology that are implanted in today's new vehicles are, you know, changing year by year by year. I mean, you have to keep up. I mean, even just like turning on the radio, you know, or changing stations, or even starting the car. I mean, it's all so progressive that you need somebody to keep you at the forefront, fresh, if you will. And that's a novel idea, going to somebody like Disney. I wonder if that's going to be a continuing trend. Do you think that that's something that the automakers are going to keep up with, or are they just using it for right now, and once they get past this bump in the road, they'll sort of kick back and do what they've always done? What do you think?
I think if they want to stay fresh, it'll be a hybrid situation where they they develop their own talent who's really good, you know, their in-house talent who yeah. understands how this stuff works. Also, this is probably going to become a part of automotive engineering to some extent. I think people coming in from the outside will yeah. be better equipped to handle this sort of thing.
Probably a 13-year-old will be able to go in there and, you know, take and totally understand every technical IT situation that applies to the automobile. I can see it now. It's always great talking to you, Tom. Thanks for being with us. Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and always a pleasure to talk to you. And obviously, Tom knows what he's talking about.